Yes, got it. We got
we
our
are
we got our syllabus
live.
For the next hour and a half.
Here
is
we
the
go. Whew. Here we go. All right.
Hit that live button right on time.
Yeah.
Also, we'll title that's what we'll title the episode is the three F's of Bitcoin veterans.
The three F's?
Yeah.
Three if F's. It flies, floats, or fucks.
I was thinking fighting, well, feeding, and fucking, but yeah.
All right, so everybody who's early, here's a tidbit that let's just say somebody close to me in my heritage gave this beautiful piece of advice, and I say this in fun and everything else, obviously, but the rule of the three F's is if it flies, floats, or fucks, you're better off renting it.
Oh my
god! Damn, that went a different way than I was expecting.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
And there's trade-offs, right? There's trade-offs to everything.
No, he's definitely right on the flying,
especially for renting
one for sure.
There's some trade-offs for renting.
The only problem with renting is like people don't treat rented things well.
No,
and you never know what you're getting.
You never know who had it before you.
Yeah.
Of course, you can say that with a lot of things that you buy that aren't brand
new. You buy a car that used to be a rental. You know what you're getting. Like,
yeah.
Like bottom line is minimal. Somebody treated that thing worse than a Humvee.
Rode hard, put away wet.
That's right. Like somebody was stomping on the gas, absolutely getting into the corners, seeing what that Ford Escape could do on the back roads of Camp Pendleton.
Ford Escape. Oh no.
The bearings are all wore out because you're trying to do drifts with it.
Shocks are completely gone. I mean,
everybody listening, y'all catching this? All the innuendo that's occurring here. And like they think they're being super smooth about it, but they're not.
I don't know what you're talking about. I have a piece of advice that I heard when I was young. And that was to, when you grow up, marry a woman with very small hands. That way, when she's holding your hand, it makes yours look bigger. So,
wow.
There's, okay. And other things, I guess.
What ethnicity is that, Gabe?
I don't know.
Is that Irish?
It was actually an Asian guy that gave me that advice. So maybe there's something to that.
Damn.
Yeah, they don't like women with big hands because then, you know, it just other things get lost in those big hands. So
gloves.
Back when I was working for Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah. You marry a woman with small hands, waxing things off and on.
Good Lord. What a week.
Man.
Already.
Yeah, it has been a week, man. Wow. Something.
Softball's up and running, Gabe.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, tis the season, dude. We are in it. So Georgia is opposite from the rest of the country. So this time of year, we have school softball. I don't know why. It's hotter than hell outside. But and it's not me. It's one of my kids. I am not a softball player.
Man.
Yeah.
You guys, Mike, I woke up this morning, went out to get the chickens out and start watering the garden and everything. And I had to go put it on a sweatshirt this morning. Like that's how.
Ooh.
Oh, I know.
Wow.
Crazy. You know, just that little bit of elevation change up here.
No.
Wow, man. We are in the high 50s. That's ridiculous.
That is wild. You guys know I work night shift now. So like nights out in the middle. So like these data centers out here in Iowa are in the middle of cornfields. And I literally just learned this. It shows how stupid I am. Like I've lived in Iowa my entire life, basically. And I didn't know that corn sweats like profusely. So out in the middle of these cornfields, it is extremely humid and it's been pretty dang cool up here too. So like I've had to wear sweatshirts at night because it gets down to like 57 and then it's super, super wet. And I'm just like, what, dude? Like, what is going on?
Wow.
Freaking mid-August in Iowa. I should not be shivering outside.
That is wild.
You know, what they need to do is they need to tax us more so that we can control the weather.
Yeah,
that's it. That's exactly
There's not enough aluminum and bromium getting put into the... You know,
that's right.
Environment, cool things off.
Man, if you're out there and you're listening to this already, maybe go on to Twitter, retweet it for us, do all the things, like, subscribe. It helps us. It helps our sponsors, you know, support those guys too, which we'll get into here in a little bit. But we appreciate all the people out there sharing the show.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, I should send that link out, huh?
Yeah.
Shane, was there anything that you wanted to touch from the dib besides talking about the three F's and man shit?
I actually like the idea of really laying into, you know, some manly stuff tonight. Like, I mean,
okay,
you know, getting into it, I think that's a great idea that Alex came up with. And yeah, I think a lot of us are, I think we're fatigued by the news cycle. Like, it's just
what?
I mean, don't get me wrong, it's interesting, but at the end of the day, there's a lot more to life, you know, out there than obviously following these.
I mean, it's interesting, but it's not, right? Because it follows the same, like, expected, like predictable pattern that we all know.
Yeah, it's all
fear, outrage over and over.
It's a clown show, man.
they're just a bunch of maniacs. We knew, though. We knew this was going to happen, did we not?
Yep.
Like, coming into this year, we've talked about it in the past. Kind of had an idea that this is the way it was going to roll.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, I'm pretty sure we mentioned it like every couple of months. We're like, this stuff's going to get crazy.
The closer we get to elections, man, all bets are off. And I mean, we've been saying this all year long. Mm-hmm. I really, 2024 is a trip, man. I mean, really, there are things popping up all over the place that nobody, absolutely, well, most people could never have predicted. And, you know, like, that's still part that I'm just like, wow, man, absolutely dumbfounded by some of the shit that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm. Man, I tell you, and after 2020, it's like, it's almost like it's the Olympics of freaking clown shows. Like, we had, you know, that was supposed to be the last Olympics, and now 2024, and it's like they got to go out there and try to make some new personal records. They want to break world records. They just want to show exactly how freaking crazy they can get with this stuff. And I agree, man. I think it's no holds barred this year. Anything could freaking happen. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I think that in retrospect, we're going to look back on this year and be freaking astonished. But they just keep pushing it. They keep pushing it. And I think it's going to be the same this year. But you know, I'm just waiting for what the new pandemic is going to be that comes out. And I don't even care. I'll say the damn word. It doesn't matter. But
Mpox.
Yeah. I mean, they're coming, man. I'm seeing pictures of that stuff and it looks terrifying. And I'm like scared to go outside. And I feel like I should put plastic bags over my head until I feel safe. And I guess we'll just see what happens. Maybe they'll just like inject me with a bunch of stuff with drones.
You know, my understanding is that Mpox thing is that it's 90% correlated to gay sex.
That's what they say.
Yeah. And, you know, what's really fun is I took a screenshot from over there months and months and months ago. And it was www.gov.uk.news. Monkeypox is a rare viral infection that does not spread easily between people. It is usually a mild self-limiting illness and most people recover within a few weeks. However, severe illness can occur in some people, like everybody with comorbidities, right? Like that's just the way it is. So, I mean, the fact that they're going to try to memory hole monkeypox, not going to happen. There are people that I think kind of learned their lesson.
Man. It's a new magical strain of monkeypox where someone in China was having sex with bats, apparently. What? And then they brought the sex back to their gay sex group. And now, obviously, that's, yeah.
Yeah. And now anybody can get it probably just by existing. Probably it's, you know.
Yeah, we better put those N95s back on. Is what you guys are saying?
you gotta double up, man. One on the front and one on the back, just in case.
Are you guys ready for the show yet?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Get a little warm up time. Hold on to your butts, Bitcoin veterans. We'll be right back. Bitcoin veterans. We're Bitcoiners. We're veterans. We do this every Tuesday night now at 6:30 Eastern time. And we get together around 6:30 Eastern time. There's a pre-show that starts around 6:45, 6:50. And then we launch things live at 7. We are going to have a great time tonight. With me tonight, as always, Alex Stanzik, Mike Hobart, and Gabe. Jordan is out for a little bit. He will be returning at some point as things settle into the fall season. But we've got a great show for you guys tonight. First and foremost, this is Bitcoin Veterans. The reason why we did this, we got together. We said, you know, there's a giant market out there that we're missing because there is so much that Bitcoin and veterans have in common. There is this understanding of liberty and peace and this idea, especially here in America, that you are sovereign and you should be free and you should be able to keep your property. And it's one of those things that I think we are born and bred with here in the United States. It's one of those things that I think most of us signed on that dotted line for up into our life. And we meant it. We take it very seriously up into this day. And so Bitcoin veterans, I know a lot of guys that are out there, they're getting out of the service or in the service or have already served, that are fairly nihilistic about the future. Bitcoin is that reverse switch, that reverse card from Uno that you play out there. And at some point, you take that nihilism, you start to see the optimism, you start to see that we're building a new parallel economy, a completely new paradigm system that is chock full of positive incentive structure than this, you know, archaic fiat cancer that we've got now. And I think that's really helped us as Bitcoin veterans reach the heights we've reached so far. We've put people on a mission. That is the Bitcoin mission. It is for liberty. It is for freedom. It is for property. It is for family. It is for faith and friends and this community that is growing so rapidly, and just to help steer everybody in the right direction, because all is not lost. This is a place for opportunity, and I am absolutely thrilled to be here. We've got a billion people behind the scenes working with us. And if you want to be part of that, you can go to bitcoinveterans.org, sign up. We'll get you into the chats and put you on the mission, whatever you want to do. And if you want to help us or you want to start your own, we've got something for you here. So without further ado, we were kind of talking about what we were going to talk about tonight, a little teaser. We're going to get into some man stuff tonight. But first, we have to hit our sponsors. First one being Silent. Who is that, man? So like somebody taking a bong rip.
Don't know. But Silent does Faraday bags, SLNT. You ever consider how much information is stored on your phone, personal data, bank account info, access to your two-factor authentication? All these apps, most of them anyway, are providing data that tells a story about you. That is why we at Bitcoin Veterans are teaming up with Silent, SLNT. They offer a efficient and easy solution to protect your location and personal data. Their Faraday products block all incoming and outgoing signals, so no one can get their hands on your information. Simply place your device inside, close the sleeve, and that's it. You're off the grid, untrackable, safe from unauthorized access. By the way, if you're a Bitcoiner, hardware wallets are also mission critical gear, are they not? It's crucial to keep them safe from hackers and events like EMPs and solar flares. SLNT's Faraday bags provide an extra layer of protection for your Bitcoin. Go check out SLNT.com/BTC Vets to save 15% plus free shipping on qualifying orders. And by the way, let me show you something real quick. My screen. Blam! That's the one for the phone.
Nice.
Check this out. Opens up like that. Phone goes inside. Close it up. This one is the one that's about the size of a cold card. So there you go. Nice. Next up, we've got Black Sheep Ammunition. Please go check these guys out. This is a veteran-owned, veteran-operated company. These guys graciously provided a bunch of ammo for our range day, last range day in Nashville. They're fantastic. Go see them.
All right. both of those guys making the world a better place. I mean, and we were just saying before the show, 2024 is getting real weird. So, you know, EMP, solar flares, all that fun stuff, not off the table.
Aliens.
Stretch of the imagination.
Aliens.
Aliens.
Are they back?
Apparently they never left.
Always here.
Beyond the great ice wall for all the flat earthers out there.
Yeah, dude. They're the lizard people living beneath the surface, you know?
Oh, boy. Wow.
It's a lot of references there.
It's pretty nice giving up on trying to play the YouTube algo and just talking about what we want to talk about, you know.
I agree. Man stuff tonight, guys. I mean, in terms of man stuff, there's a billion different paths we could go down. Alex, why don't you help us out with what you were thinking first and foremost. What was on the tip of your mind when you introduced that topic tonight?
Sure. So one of the main reasons that for me that I wanted to start Bitcoin Veterans is that I believe that in Western countries and in the United States today, that there is a gigantic vacuum of strong male role models. And in fact, you know, there's been slow progression in society where it's like being a strong man is somehow bad. You know, you may have heard this term toxic masculinity as if masculinity is somehow bad. And we went from basically a society where the men in the family would work, the women would not work. You had a tight family unit. The kids spent a lot of time with parents. They had a lot of parental influence in their growing up. And the dudes were out there like fighting the dragons and slaying the creatures and building the castles and providing sustenance for their people, right? To where at one point, this is my opinion. I personally think that modern feminism was a construct of like a sort of an amalgamation of big corporate interests and communism, because basically they align. You know what I mean? It's like, if you can destroy the family unit, if you can break up families, if you can get everybody running on a treadmill, you create more consumers. Here's the real mind-blowing thing. If you can break up families and you can convince women that you should not stay at home, that somehow you suck or you're lesser or less powerful or less good at, excuse me, less good of a human being because you stay at home and you manage a household versus going out and chasing some kind of corporate career, that you are somehow a better person. But guess what? My opinion, they snowed the shit out of you, because what they have now is they have twice as many taxpayers as they used to. They have families that the kids never see the parents. They have families that now the kids go to public school and they don't have any other choice because both parents are running on that hamster wheel and don't have time to take care of their own children. So the public school system becomes like the daytime babysitter. You know, you ask people, why don't you homeschool their kids? Like, well, dang, I can't afford that. What does that tell you? It tells you that their lives are being driven by the money, by the fiat system, by running on that hamster wheel. And it's had catastrophic effects for society. You've got kids growing up in homes where there's no fathers, there's no father figures, there's a lot of dudes. I bet you if you went out there and you picked 100 dudes off the street, young men under the age of, let's call it 25 years old, and you asked them, do you have any strong male role models? How many do you think would say yes?
Yeah.
You have
20%.
Even in your sphere of anybody you come into contact on a regular basis, do you have any?
Yeah, they don't get those male role models until they get sent into prison.
Okay, so.
Or the army.
This is what I'm getting at. This is that, you know, you guys have heard this thing about, you know, strong men make good times create weak men create bad times create strong men, right? Well, we're in that. Weak men create bad times part. Mm-hmm. And it kind of sucks for a lot of people. You know, I see these kind of videos and interviews all the time where young ladies nowadays are like, where have all the men gone? You know, I mean, they're frustrated because there's all these dudes out there who have no idea how to be a man. They think being a man is like, I really don't know what they think.
Well, and the ladies don't know, like, they don't know what to look for because they weren't raised by fathers with proper.
With
the proper qualities and attributes that they would, that, like, not only the proper qualities and attributes being possessed in the father, but the father being capable of having leadership of the household and the communication skills to, like, pass that knowledge and that wisdom down onto their daughters.
Okay, so let me finish up this thought, and then you guys can run wild. All right, I just wanted to get this off my chest because there's all of that. You know, if you find there are some young gals out there who grew up in a household with a strong dad, you know what the advantage of that is? They're going to compare every young man they meet to the dad. And they're going to be like, how does this dude stack up to my dad? How did my dad took care of me?
There are some girls of guys in this audience that will never, ever be able to find a guy like their dad. Because that's the caliber of this audience. I think that's the biggest shame of this whole thing. Is,
well, don't crush their hopes, Shane. They'll find them. They're out there. And you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna help. We're gonna help. Here's what I believe. I believe that you might even have kind of tendencies towards being a strong dude, but that could be beaten out of you through Western society's bullshit.
Yeah.
And unless you're around strong dudes that sharpen you, that's a difficult battle. You have to have guys around you who are strong, who are going to challenge you, who are going to make you reevaluate yourself and go, damn, I really suck in these different areas. I need to get better.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Last thing I'm going to say, I've been talking about this book a lot. I'm going to go back to talking about it, The Way of Men by Jack Donovan, because I think everybody should read this book personally. If you're part of Bitcoin Veterans, please read this book. Even if you're not, please read this book. If you're a dude, if you're a woman, please read this book. It'll help you understand men. But the point, there's something that this guy says in this book that I think is like profoundly important in this day and age. And that is, there is a huge difference between being a good man and being good at being a man. Huge difference. Mm-hmm. And every institution out there, every church, every women's group, every you name it, will have their own definition of what a good man is. So in order to be a good man, you need to do this, 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 and this. The problem with that is that that's not necessarily the definition of a good man. It's the definition of what they want a man to be. But all you have to do is look at human nature and look at history to determine what it is that makes a man good at being a man. This book talks about it a lot. So I'll stop right there and let's see where we go.
I'll give you guys some stats to back all of this up. The prevalence of kids without a father, a biological stepfather, adoptive father in the home in America is 1 in 4, which I think is a staggering statistic. In poverty, children in fatherless homes are 4 times more likely to be in poverty. About 47.6% of children in single mother households live in poverty, compared to 11% of children in married couple families. On education, fatherless children are more likely to struggle academically. They are twice as likely to drop out of high school and have lower reading levels than children with fathers in their lives. Behavioral and emotional issues are huge. They are more likely to exhibit aggression, have a higher likelihood of engaging in delinquency, and are more prone to substance abuse. In terms of crime and incarceration, boys from fatherless homes are more likely to end up in prison. Approximately 85% of youth in prisons grew up in fatherless homes. That fits that 1 in 4 statistic almost to a T. Teen pregnancy, girls in fatherless homes are more likely to become pregnant as teenagers. They are 7 times more likely to become pregnant as teens compared to those who live with their both biological parents. And lastly, on mental health, children from fatherless homes are far more likely to experience mental health issues, including depression, anxiety, and suicide. They are also more prone to having lower self-esteem and emotional instability.
Facts. Yeah, and something else that in Donovan's book there, Alex, that I want to touch on is further down the difference of being a good man and being good at being a man. And I'm going to paraphrase one of the other key thoughts that I picked up out of the book is that men that are more concerned about being a good man will find themselves to end up just being well-behaved slaves. And that's really what it comes down to. When you're so focused on, okay, because what that really does is that's nothing more than an extension of being a good little boy when you're growing up. And that is so much of what is of the expectation that is pounded into boys' minds when they're in the public school system specifically is sit down and shut up, be a good boy, behave, and basically be a girl. And that is what the problem is. And so we've got these generations of boys that are being, first of all, raised by women in the home and then being raised by women in the school system, which, okay, I mean, God bless the women who are stuck in these cycles of single motherhood that don't know how they got into it and how they can get out, and they're doing their best and trying to look after their kids. But the fact remains is, that's not the healthiest situation or environment for a boy growing up, as the data will certainly show. But there is not a way that I can see for us to get out of this other than for more men to step up, get involved in their communities. And like you said, Alex, first and foremost, I mean, get plugged into a community of other men that are first and foremost going to call you on your bullshit when they see bullshit, that are going to punch you in the guts when you're acting like when you're being a wimp, okay? that are going to hold you accountable and also expect the same from you. Okay? And but the thing is, we've got this entire concept of toxic masculinity that guys are going to like bend over and take this stuff right up the ass and just accept it and say, okay, you're right. I don't want to be a bad guy. I don't want to be a mean guy. I don't want to be like one of these men in these movies that come out or these TV shows that are portraying men as, you know, if you're assertive and if you stand up, then you're boorish and you're cruel and you're mean. And it's just been wired into this collective consciousness of multiple generations of men that if you do behave that way, then you're somehow a bad person. You're somehow wrong and you're somehow evil. That, when you couple it with a complete and total absence of positive male role models, it's not a winning situation. And I dropped a comment earlier, and I was trying to be kind of snarky about it, but for a lot of young men, the first time they see any type of at least strong role model is when they find themselves incarcerated. Now, again, these are not men that are good at being men, but they're definitely good at displaying strong masculine characteristics. The only problem is what they do is they grab a hold of these impressionable young men, drag them into the gangs, which is the only place they're going to find any type of masculine influence. Unfortunately, they're being manipulated to commit crimes and do things that are ultimately destructive to people in society in general. But and I see it quite a bit in a neighboring community where this is, it's rampant. Poverty is extremely high. There are no there's no male role model presence in the majority of the families. And the problem, one of the other problems, is there's a cycle of the women who have been through these types of situations, who became mothers when they're very young. And then when they have daughters, they literally teach them, this is what you do. And even worse, they say, let me introduce you to, this man over here that I know, who oftentimes is much, much older than these young girls who are 14, 15 years old. And they're taught to, you know, you be good to him over there, and then you can have a baby and you can get on, public support and welfare and all those. And it's just this freaking cycle that keeps on going. And the boys, the young men, they're not taught responsibility. Okay. They get all these girls just thrown at them because they want to get pregnant and perpetuate this cycle. And they're not taught responsibility. They're just taught, okay, I mean, how many young men do you know? You know, how many 18-year-olds do you know that if somebody is just throwing these girls at them, they're not just going to say, okay, all right, they're going to do that. That's just okay. They can't even help it. Their hormones are overpowering any other thought process that they have. But anyway, I kind of rambled there. Anyway, I think my intent was to really illustrate the cycle that's taking place and the numerous different factors that are occurring as a result of it. But again, to touch on something that you mentioned earlier, Alex, that I believe that there are intentional forces at play that do this on purpose, that want people to be, obviously, you're breeding an entire society of people that are entirely and wholly dependent upon the state for their very survival. Yep. By doing this. And it's not, I mean, if they really wanted to stop it, you could stop it. If people really wanted to dedicate resources to something like this to transform and to change the direction of that, they could. But there's a reason why, with all the trillions of dollars that we spend on these social programs, that none of them freaking work. And every single one of them only exacerbates the problem and makes it even worse. That's all I have for right now.
Mike?
You know, There's one thing that I wanted to actually mention that Alex commented on earlier, and an interesting thing that I don't think it was part of the primary objective as far as getting women into the workforce, but I think ended up being an accidental benefit was the just for all four of us here, who are the most active participants of a consumerist economy? It's rhetorical. It's not men.
Yeah,
I can tell you that. It's mostly women, right? Like they tend to buy more stuff. Like they're the ones that are doing the window shopping all the time. Like guys are stereotypically known for, if we know what we want, we walk into the store, wherever it is, we get exactly what we want, we get out. Right? Where there's no looking for sales, right? Because it's just a ploy by the marketing teams to try and get you to spend more money because they want you to think that you're saving money by spending money, which doesn't make sense. But then I was actually, believe it or not, I was part of a spaces, one of the like late night, very early morning spaces because of my work schedule. There was a conversation going on around, I think Alex had like definitely, I'm very confident he had touched on it with like particularly the inability for parents to dedicate enough time to actually parent. And one of the major issues is like, it first starts with, you can't have this conversation without talking about the economy first, because we have an average of 2.3 jobs per two parent household, which means that at least one person is working two jobs, right? Problem number one. Which means that both parents are losing out on the opportunity and the time to properly parent their children at home. And who ends up filling that void? Immediately, like first thing is daycare, right? Daycare workers and nannies and stuff like that. But then we also have the issue of the teachers filling that void as far as parenting. And the reason that that's a problem, or both of them are problems, is that the nannies and the teachers are in the same exact boat as the parents are. Like they're running on the Fiat hamster wheel, and the Fiat hamster wheel gets faster and faster every year, especially the last couple of years, which means that they have to chase income more and more in a constantly and rapidly debasing currency, which means that they have to work harder and longer in order to actually get the income that they need to try and provide an opportunity for their children later on in their lives. And they like that all boils down to not having enough time, like not even like not having enough time to parent, but not having enough time for themselves. Like in order, like we all know, because we've done a lot of the work, at least the four of us on this call. But in order for a parent, in my opinion, to be truly wise and to really prepare their child for particularly the darkest parts of reality that they're going to have to deal with in the open world, is you have to spend time with yourself, right? Like you have to develop your philosophical, your spiritual, and your emotional intelligence and capabilities in order to be able to handle the stressors that are going to be coming at you. And I don't know about you guys, I'm the youngest one on this call, but there's not a whole lot of adults out there that are capable of handling a lot of like the realities of life right now, especially in the Western societies, like America in particular. And this all boils down to like the teachers and the daycare workers are filling the void of parenting. And the way that they're filling it is through dictates and doctrines that are passed down from the federal government and the state government through the education system. And then when you look at that, the textbooks that they're using to pass on those doctrines are very limited in scope as far as like what actually happened in reality, especially when we're talking about World War II and forward. And then you, so like you get, and like they position these textbooks as like all knowing tablets of stone that cannot be questioned or cannot be wrong. And you're raising entire generations of society that are incapable of critical thinking more and more, like each following generation. And then to add another layer on top of that, we have the technology situation. Nowadays, especially with technology today, with the laptops we're streaming this on and our cell phones that are supercomputers in our pockets, you have the capability of this information and these textbook dictates of being spread wider than ever, faster than ever, which means that they can also spread deeper than ever on top of the news headlines. So we have entire, we have like each generation is getting more and more indoctrinated. And then each generation is also being trained away from critical thinking, which means that they are less capable of parenting, and less capable parents are less capable of raising proper members of society, which continues to devolve, like as Alex and Gabe have very adequately described. Like this is, it's just a giant, I'm sorry for the language, but it's a giant clusterfuck. And you, and ultimately, like I started the whole kind of like chain with, is like, you got to get back to the economics. If people, if the nuclear family can't afford to not only stay nuclear, but also be able to simply have like access to strategies for generational wealth, this is what we get. Like all of society starts to degrade.
I would like to ask, you know, you guys, you know, in terms of, you made some really salient points there, Mike. And the thing that I think people struggle with is, you know, this relationship. How do you do what we're saying, you know, needs to be done, you know? And I'd like to hear from, you know, all you guys, like, what is your practice in this? I mean, obviously, we'll get into Bitcoin and how that kind of corrects the incentive structure here from the top down and from the inside of our family outwards. But, you know, in terms of practical application, what are you guys doing on a normal basis? Because, you know, Alex, you've got kids that have gone. Gabe, you've got, you know, some that are home. Mike, you know, you're preparing. And it's one of those things where, you know, to have these different stages of life, you know, represented here and how you guys are, you know, putting your ideology into practical application, I think is very helpful to share.
Sure, I'll go. So as Shane mentioned, my kids are all grown. They're all older. And one of them is just about to finish college. She's getting a master's degree here shortly. One of them is actually about to get out of the United States Navy. He's been a cyber warfare guy for the last 6 years. So he's super excited about that. And so am I. And then my youngest is a young dude who's looking at possibly going in the Coast Guard. But as far as how I continue to apply that, I mean, all you can probably ask my kids. There's a saying that, like, you know, if you want to know something about a person, just look at how their kids behave. I think there's something to that. Now, granted, there's always wild childs. You know what I mean? There are certain genetic strains, certain kids that are just straight up ornery, and like, there's no amount of good parenting that's going to fix ornery, right? They're just ornery and they're going to have to learn their lessons and whatever. But I'm talking about in general, like if you come across a family and the kids are very respectful and they're smart and they're kind and they pay attention and they listen and they don't just blow you off and they're just good people, you know, that I think reflects a lot on the parent. And, you know, I like Shane is a good example of this. Actually, if you've ever met Shane's kids, they're some of the most respectful, kind, critical thinking little people I run into in a long time. You know, they're good kids. But I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, how much time are you investing in those kids? And they homeschool their kids. We homeschooled our kids for a period of time. I think that has a lot to do with it, you know, as well as just investing time in them. What I do nowadays, this comes back to the whole, how do you get good at being good at a man thing versus being a good man? And like, the typical stuff that you hear out there, I think the churches are full of this kind of stuff. You know, they tell men, well, you have to act like this. You gotta be this way and that way and the other way. And what you end up with is I'm sorry to say if I offend this, but there's a lot of weak dudes in the churches today. There's a lot of weak pastors. There's a lot of staffs of churches that are super weak. And I don't think they're doing anybody any favors. You know what I mean? I don't believe that in order to be a good Christian man, for example, that you have to be a gigantic puss. I don't think those are, you know, two things that you have to do that go together. I think that, you know, there's a saying, Jordan Peterson talked about this. He's like, if you really want to be a good dude, be a dangerous dude. Learn how, you know, this is the difference between peaceful and harmless. Like Gary has been talking to Gary Kraut, or Gary K, I should say. I'm not going to say his full name, but Gary K is part of Bitcoin Veterans, right? He even made these t-shirts that they were selling at Nashville. Be peaceful, not harmless, right? Because if you're a guy that's completely incapable of inflicting harm on another human being, you're not peaceful. You're just harmless. You're a goddamn rabbit running around. You know what I mean? Bouncing, and you're cute and you're fuzzy, and like anything out there that's not a rabbit could destroy you. You know what I mean? That's not peaceful. That is harmless. So I agree with that concept. You know what I mean? It's not that like you need to go out there and just go beating a whole bunch of people up or any of that kind of stuff. It has nothing to do with it. Like all the warriors I know, they're the least likely people to get into a violent confrontation. Why? Because they know what they can do, and B, they know they don't have to prove anything to anybody. Right. So that's part of it. I mean, why would you even go about doing all that other kind of stuff? Well, because we live in a society today that has completely removed all of the man things from life. You back up the clock a couple thousand years, life was not as easy as it is today.
Or even 100 years ago, you know, like
fair.
I mean,
like 200 years ago, right?
This is a recent phenomenon.
Recent phenomenon where you've got your house, you've got your air conditioning, you've got your internet, you've got your phones, you've got your cars, you can order food and it just shows up at your house, you know? It's so easy. It's so easy. And it's taken all the struggle out of life. And the problem with that is there's dudes out there who lives their whole lives right now, and they don't feel like they have any purpose. They don't have any reason, because they're looking at their life and they're going, well, I'm running on my hamster wheel. There's no respect. Right. And men thrive on and need respect. Respect from their children, respect from their peers, respect from their wives. This is biblical, guys. In the Bible, it says, women, respect your husbands. Men, love your wives. I don't think that's an accident. There's a reason for that. And men thrive on respect. But what do you have in today's society? You've got The Simpsons. You've got Family Guy. Like, when was the last time you saw a good TV series where the head of the family, the male, was treated with respect and honor? Or did they just treat him like some idiot that they have to tolerate? Right? So, ultimately... And whether you agree with this or not, I mean, stew on it, think about it, read the book, right? Ultimately, a lot of times you're going to derive some part of your self-worth based upon the respect that you receive from your peers. Who are your peers? Your male peers, right? So when you're trying to figure out this equation, you know, the whole thing about get around guys that will sharpen you. Most dudes aren't going to listen to other dudes unless they respect those dudes. And the problem with that is it's kind of hard to find dudes to respect nowadays. Right? So you got to go out there and you got to find yourself a group of guys or dudes or build a group of guys or seek guys out that you can respect. They have something in their life that you respect, and it doesn't have to be everything. Not, oh, nobody's perfect. You know, they don't have to have every part of their life in perfect order, but they've got to have aspects of their life, in my opinion, that you can admire and respect. And then that way, when you're close to them and they say, hey, brother, let's talk about this thing, you know, whatever it may be, or just by the way they live their lives by example and being around them, you'll sit there and you'll go, damn, I kind of suck in this area a little bit. Need to fix that. If you don't have dudes in your life where you're saying that to yourself every now and then, find different dudes. I'll stop there.
Find different dudes. Create a group of different dudes. Alex, I think is a phenomenal answer. There's so much you can do to change your situation. It's a matter of, are you willing to put in the work to do it? And putting in the work to do it. And one of the things, you know, I'll come back around to the question for the other two guys here in a second, but, you know, putting that work in, you know, is one of those things where I know, and I've dealt with it myself, especially being in public life, is, you know, opening yourself up to, you know, trusting other guys again, right? And a lot of that's really tough, especially in this world, because it's like, damn, every time you turn around, you stumble across, you know, somebody who, you know, I know we're all human beings, but there are some unforgivable sins out there. And those unforgivable sins, you know, when they cross that line, you know, I think probably a lot of us are thinking about whatever that is. You know, that's hard to open yourself up to. But I will tell you, what I have found in this group so far, within Bitcoin Veterans and the community that it is full of a bunch of guys who are walking a line towards that, you know, what Jack Donovan talks about in the book. He talks about strength. He talks about courage. He talks about mastery, and he talks about honor. And when you understand that that's where we're headed and there's no compromise to get there. And it's a lot of damn hard work. I think that's what scares off a lot of people. And then the second part of that is opening yourself up. And I'm not saying be vulnerable and be stupid. I'm saying, you know, a little here and a little there, and all of a sudden, you know, maybe you go through something, you know, with some guys, that's hard, that sucks, that, you know, starts to build camaraderie, you know, whether it's, you know, physicality, whether it's, you know, some sort of an emotional event or some, whatever it is, there's a time and a place for all of that. And you've got to create, if you can't find those groups, you have to create your own. But yeah, curious to still hear back from you, Gabe and Mike, about you know, what you guys are doing in your lives to kind of promote this.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and jump. It seemed like that was kind of the cycle from before. But yeah, Alex, I mean, all over it, dude. You know, and I guess I would just build on that by saying, especially when it comes to the next generation, and this is, you know, within your own family, but also beyond that, you know, you got to make sure that you're, first of all, self-aware enough to know what your shortcomings are and what you need to work on. And you touched on that earlier, Mike. Self-assessment is very important. Okay. Even when you are a part of a community of men that will call you out, that know you well enough, that will give you that accountability, having self-assessment skills is also extremely relevant. We've got to be able to gauge where we are, and understand where we're at on the path, at any given time, in addition to being a part of a tribe of other men that will hold us to the fire when we're straying and we're veering away. Now, I've got two kids that are grown, and I've got one that's still at the house. And I mean, I made a lot of mistakes with the first couple growing up. I really did. And I learned a lot. And, you know, I mean, there were a lot of things that if I could do differently, I would, of course. But at the same time, you know, we had been able to, you know, subsequently work through and talk about and all grow from that. And then to come to a place where we could find value in those experiences that help to shape them into the stronger people that they are now because of that. And then it also gave me an opportunity to, you know, be very open about the experience and to show them what vulnerability as a parent looks like, while also demonstrating the strength that is required to admit the fact that, look, I don't know everything as a parent. I don't know everything as your father and as a man in general, but I'm here and I'm a part of this, and I'm here with you on this journey in this life. And that leads me to what I've seen is a very impactful thing that I've done intentionally with all of my children is I have, from the moment that they entered this world, I made a conscious effort to never let them question my presence in their lives. They know that I'm here. They've always known that I'm here. And this was one of those things. I mean, you find whatever routines work for you in your family's life growing up. You know, if it's going to be every morning, you know, dad's going to make breakfast for you. Every morning, you're going to sit down and read to them. I can tell you that that's probably, that is one of the most impactful decisions that I ever made in the lives of my children was when it was bedtime, dad read to them. And that's just how it was before they even knew what books were. Okay. All three of them, I was holding them, reading a book to them at night. And all three of them now have, they have throughout their entire lives, they had cognitive skills that far exceeded that of their peers. Of course, they're all, you know, stellar readers and always have been. They were reading more complicated books than a lot of eighth graders were when they were, you know, 6-7 years old. But the fact is, they had that love for reading because that was something that they shared with their father from far back as they could possibly remember. And so there was that association that they had with the experience of reading, which I think is, I mean, obviously it's a fundamental skill of life. And what it does is it opens up our minds to be more absorbent to knowledge and new information. And it creates an analytical pattern in our mindsets that really shapes who we are as people. And so if you can get your kids to love reading because it's dad that's reading to them, do it. And it doesn't matter what you're reading. And it doesn't have to be great. It doesn't, you know, if you don't have any Dr. Seuss books in the house or something, just grab a Bitcoin book and read it to them. That's okay. I know everybody listening here probably has one of those, and they'll be better off for it anyway. But something in addition to that is it's important for kids to see that you do work to improve yourself. That's something that I've learned. My kids know. They've all known that dad gets up earlier than everybody else in the house. And I'm doing that. I'm exercising. I'm doing something. I'm going out for a run. I'm out in the garage. I'm going up to the gym. They know that's what dad does. And that's just, I mean, as far as they know, that's like for all eternity, that's what I've always done probably since I was an infant, but obviously it's not the case, but they know. By the time they wake up, by the time I go in and I say, hey guys, come on, it's time to get up. Let's go. Let's get your day going. You know, dad's already sweaty. He's been working out. He's drinking his protein drink. And that's just the habit that they see is there is a concerted effort of self-improvement and continuously working to grow and taking the time and setting it aside. In addition to that, you know, it's things like, they know that, you know, dad gets up. They all know what my morning patterns are, what my morning routine is. Okay. Because by the time they get up, my Bible is still sitting on the kitchen table from where I've been sitting it next to my empty cup of coffee. I'm sweaty from working out. They can see what's been going on. And they also see that part of that routine is, you know, I've prepped some stuff for their breakfast because that's just something I enjoy doing. There's something satisfying about preparing food for my family. It's like you're literally and figuratively giving them sustenance that they need to start the day. And so that's just something that I grabbed a hold of and I said I was going to do. But being present, man, it matters. Just being there. Okay. And when you don't feel like it, freaking do it anyway. Do it anyway, because they are going to know. All right. And they're going to definitely know if you're not there. And so just that presence alone, I've learned, is can be tremendously valuable. In addition to that, I want to say that it's important to for them to see that you have relationships outside of the family unit. It's important for them to know that you have a tribe of people. It's important for them to know that you are a part of a community of other men and that it's a strong community of other men. That way, there's just a different feeling of security that I've seen that they have, other than, you know, the kid that has the lone wolf dad. And I know some people are more social than others. I get it. But we are tribal creatures, and kids do see that. And not only that, they see that model for how their lives should be to have the most healthy and satisfying and community-based life that they can have. And I know I talk to a lot of guys, and there's some that they're like, where do I start, man? You know, everybody, all the guys I know, they're weak. They're this and they're that. But one thing that I've learned and I've learned from talking with other people on, you know, hey, how do you find a community? How do you find guys to hang out with that, you know, that aren't freaking worthless? Find ways to add value to your community, and you will find other people that are doing the same. So get out there, find a need in your community and fill that need. And you will find other guys, other men that are doing the same thing. Okay. Go to places where people are improving themselves. You're not going to find, I'm sorry, I mean, you know, people can not like this, whatever they want, but you're not going to find a strong community of men to grow with at the bar. It's not going to happen. Okay. You're going to find drinking buddies, and you might have some good times, and you might kind of be there. If somebody gets in a fight, you might kick somebody's ass for them or something like that. That's not what it's about. Okay. Go to the damn gym. Okay, I don't care if you're a weak body. I don't care if you don't feel like you can hang it or whatever. Get out there and start working, and just, you know, put yourself around other people that are contributing. Put yourself around other people that are growing, and then just get out there. Okay, and it does require a little bit of vulnerability sometimes. It's all right. Okay, most I've talked to the people that I've spoken to that have gone to the gym and they're self-conscious and they're not sure if they can, you know, get out there, and they're embarrassed that everybody's going to know they can't bench press 225 pounds. Okay. That's fine. Get out there. I have never heard of somebody going to the gym and other stronger men like coming around and making fun of them. If anything, they're going to come up and be like, hey man, here, can I give you a tip on this? Check it out. Okay. Put your grip like this on the bar, do it like this, maybe go like this. Let me spot you. And I mean, you see other men that are going to jump in and want to help, because there's this natural respect for other men that are working to grow stronger. And so get your ass out there and do something that's going to improve your condition in life. And ultimately it's going to make you more freaking dangerous too. And that's a good thing. Okay. It's like you said before, a dangerous man is someone who's good at being a man, but somebody who's harmless, you're just not going to get it done. So yeah. Find something that's going to make yourself more dangerous. Find something that's going to add value, and you will find other people that are doing the same, and then connect with them and then move forward.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to interject one thing real quick, Mike. I know you're up, but A, it's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. Totally believe that. But the other thing that Gabe was talking about is that for the, you know, going out there being a lone wolf and all that, that was actually me for a long time in my life. Like I am, believe it or not, I am very much an introvert. I like being alone. I could be in the wilderness, on a mountain, whatever, wherever I'm at, all by myself. Don't really feel the need to seek out other humans for contact. And I will tell you that if you've got that going on in your life, man, if you can get yourself around some strong dudes, you will grow way, 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 way faster, way faster. Because that's been my personal experience. Go do that. It's good for you. Mike?
Well, and to add off of that, like the lone wolf has to learn all of his lessons on his own. The wolf is part of the pack. He could learn vicariously from the others, right? Like that's just more efficient. Like, and that's one thing that like Gabe brought up that I actually wanted to kind of like tackle is that the lone wolf is very, I would say, desirable as far as like for the masculine species, right? Because like there's nothing better than being able to say that you did it all on your own. Unfortunately, it's not realistic, right? Like there's very few characters that can actually learn all of the proper lessons, come out being not only good at a man, but a good man. And he did it all on his own. If you did, you probably caused all sorts of hell and havoc on the way there. And like you ended up creating more problems than you did solutions. And I think all four of us have probably been there, especially leaving behind hell and havoc. But one thing in particular that I like talking about on a consistent basis is that like when we're talking about masculinity, we're essentially talking about modeling after the King of the Jungle, right? The King of the Jungle is not the chest beater that is shouting at every possible opportunity to draw attention to himself. The real King of the Jungle, or the King Arthur, or whoever you want to model it after, they are confident in their power, and they are efficient in how that power is delivered. Like if you're king, you don't just throw that weight around and waste time and energy. You wait until the problem gets to the point where nobody can solve it. It's like, all right, fine. I will get up. I will solve this. I will provide the solution. Leave me the F alone. Like that's essentially the proper king in my opinion. And unfortunately for the men of the last, I say since World War II, because the greatest generation went over to World War II, came back broken, and raised a bunch of broken generations, is that the proper male role model just hasn't been available, right? And like, I mean, like that's essentially what we're talking about. And like the one thing that actually that kind of interrupted my thought process just now is that Alex mentioned how life has gotten so much easier. Essentially, that's what he was getting at with like, you can get food delivered, you got Amazon, you have all this stuff that is supporting ease of decision, because it's taken away a lot of like this, like the monotonous task to get what you want. The problem is that men's existence is defined by struggle. Like the whole point to being a man is to find those sticking points and getting past them, whether it's for your woman or for your family or for yourself or for all three, right? And as life gets easier, the difficulties turn from external, which would be the environment, to internal. Because if you're not finding that struggle, like you find out that developing and becoming a proper man becomes a lot more difficult. And that's actually why one of the, I don't know if you would call it a solution. Maybe it's a solution, but like I was a personal trainer for a short stint. I went to college for exercise science. And the reason why I went down those rabbit holes was that I learned myself that some of the best philosophical discussions I've had with myself and philosophical lessons that I've learned have been in the squat rack and while I'm deadlifting. Because one of the reasons why physical training develops the psychological and the philosophical is that you learn very quickly that if you can't reach a certain height that you want, you have to fail and try and fail and try and recover and sleep and eat and then fail again and then try again in order to get where you actually want to go. And when life is as easy as it is today, and it's only going to keep getting easier, learning those lessons and really understanding those lessons is going to get more and more difficult. And the individuals and the men that don't take the time or don't get exposure to that kind of lifestyle, which means that their dads are the ones that aren't going out and lifting on a consistent basis while they're growing up, and they're not seeing the Gabes getting up early morning before everybody else is starting. It's like, hey, I'm getting my work done now. Like, I'm going to get it done before everybody wakes up so I can get everything prepared. Those that don't get exposure to that, they don't even know that that kind of lifestyle is out there. Right. Yeah. Like, as a young child growing up, I didn't know about the whole weightlifting thing because my dad gave it up. My dad was an Olympic weightlifter, like in his younger years before, like I came into the picture. And because of the Fiat hamster wheel, he had to work harder and longer in order to get it done. So really the majority of what I saw was him sitting in front of the TV because he was freaking exhausted the whole time. And that's the hard part is, and like I said, men's existence is defined by struggle. Guys, yeah. You don't want to get up in the morning and work out, but if you want your kids to be good people and effective people in a society, sorry, but you're gonna have to sack up, get the fuck up, man. Like yeah. You gotta go. I don't care if it's at 4 a.m. or at 4 p.m. Like you gotta go get the work done.
Man, I love that thing you just said, that men's lives are defined by struggle. Here's the other thing is that if you don't seek the struggle will find you. Mm. Like yeah. Life is going to get way, way, way harder for you over time if you don't seek that out and become stronger. I want to ask Shane Hazel for a second. If a dude is just encountering these concepts for the first time and he doesn't know the very first thing about how to become a dangerous man, how does he do that?
Boy, at this age, I'd have to go back so far in time. I guess it starts with finding a man that's going to care about you, you know, that really loves you. And that's unfortunately, that's not available for everyone, you know, and I should say it's not available for everyone. It's not gifted to everybody. That's what I should say. It's not gifted to a lot of us. You know, we won the fucking lucky sperm club, right? Like, you know, we have dads that love us, that care about us, and that took the time. They worked two jobs, you know, sometimes as a machinist and a respiratory tech to pay the bills, to make sure that the lights and the food and the clothes and all that stuff was done. And you just had a positive role model, you know, being part of that club. And then some of you guys are going to have to work for it. Some of you guys are going to have to go out and show some fucking initiative. You're going to have to go out and you're going to have to find somebody out there that will love you, that will care about you. But that's going to mean you showing up. It's going to mean showing up early. It's going to be showing up ready to do the work. It's going to be shut your mouth and get it done. Ask appropriate questions so that you're not wasting their time. And then, you know, putting in the extra effort, even when they aren't in your presence, to further understand and to reflect well on them, because now you've created that relationship. And I think that's the critical part of getting started. So whether you won, you know, the Lucky Sperm Club or you did not, you know, two different ways to get there. But I will tell you, you know, from my own experience and having seen that, and also having had a grandfather down the street that was, you know, an engineer, that was a builder, that was, you know, one of those guys, you know, that I had that in droves between those two guys. You know, my grandfather was 10 houses down. So, you know, that's that side. And I think what you learn very early is you have to not only, you know, like I hear this, you know, from, I think it's just, you know, the way we speak sometimes. And I try to be as accurate as I can with the way I'm presenting language. You know, I don't think any life is easy. You know, if you're on this planet, there's some, you know, some struggle. Are we more comfortable in our struggle than our predecessors? Probably. You know, you look back over the, you know, tens of thousands of years that humans have been around, and yeah, we're pretty comfortable. That comfort is definitely a hindrance. And if you want to be a more dangerous man, if you want to be a more well-rounded man, if you want to be a man that other people look up to, there's some things that you have to do. And I think one of the things that you learn very early on, if you're going to be one of those guys, is you have to make being uncomfortable a habit. And that is, you know, I think you guys have all hit on it, is, you know, what are your uncomfortable habits? You know, starting at a very early age for me, you know, we got into martial arts at a very early age. You know, one of the things I think that, you know, I saw a study on jiu-jitsu the other day that, you know, young boys, especially who are in jiu-jitsu, are more, obviously more dangerous first and foremost, but they're also better behaved. They have much more self-control over their emotions and their physicality. And that's one of those things that is a byproduct as a result of, you know, dedicating yourself to being uncomfortable in those types. I'm not saying you have to do, you know, martial arts. I highly recommend it. You know, and I was exposed to, you know, a championship football team from the age of 10 up until I left high school. And, you know, to have those repetitions and where you're at a very early age and you've got guys who are former soldiers, former Marine tunnel rats from Vietnam that are looking out for you, but that are, they're not only holding you accountable, they expect you to live up to the standard that they're setting for you. I think that's what you need to find. You need to find people that are going to set standards for you, and then they're going to hold you accountable. And I think, Alex, you hit on that a little bit, is, you know, this give and take, it's not just, you know, a friendship. Sometimes there's a mentor, like there's a hierarchy, right? And there's an old saying, you know, beware of old men in dangerous professions, or at least that know dangerous things, right? That's one of those things where you find a master, you know, and I don't mean this in, you know, the colloquial way where, you know, we're talking about slave. I'm find a guy who's a master, who has the 10,000 hours, the 10,000 reps of, you know, whatever he has studied and is now passing it on to you. Find the masters and earn their trust, earn their love, earn those things. And I think it's going to propel you into a better version of yourself. And, you know, for me and my family, you know, luckily for me, I've had those guys that just helped me, you know, to understand, you know, that inner dialogue within me is like, hey man, this is going to suck. Let's go do it. Let's go get it over with. Let's think about this in a different way. And I think it dawned on me probably during boot camp, that I was getting paid to become a better person. And I don't mean that in terms of, like, you know, the perverted side of this, you know, the military industrial complex. What I'm saying is there is something about understanding that your suffering is going to make you a better person at the end of the day. And that's going to drive you into other things that, you know, some people are going to look at it as mountains and you're going to look at it as a molehill. It's you know, it's going to change your perspective on how you approach life. And I think the last, you know, thing, probably the most important thing, is the faith side. There's something about really, there's whatever religion you are, that's fine with me. I have no issue. You know, I would highly recommend finding a God, you know, a higher power to serve. But for me, you know, one of the things that I think makes you absolutely one of the most dangerous people on the planet is your relationship and your faith. And I say that because if you are one of those people who are already uncomfortable and uncomfortable being uncomfortable, making habits out of that, the way you can go out and now turn to your faith when something isn't right, and then that muscle in itself, that muscle is that faith is a muscle. And so when you find a moment in your life where things are not going your way, things are not going according to plan A, B, C, D, or F, like you are absolutely stuck, you're in a bad place, if your initial instinct is to stop and take a deep breath and find a moment to communicate with your creator and say, hey, like, I'm dense, man. I am having a really, really hard time out here. What are you trying to show me? What are you trying to help me understand? How am I supposed to be growing right now? If you can do that, you're going to be so much further ahead, not only in your own life, but with everybody's life that you touch, because now you're that same voice in the storm. You're that person that says, hey, it doesn't matter. We got breath in our lungs. We got the rest of our lives to figure out what we're supposed to be doing. And that faith is something that is absolutely unshakable. And when it's perfected, when it is built, and I mean built with getting on your knees when times get really tough, if you can do that, God's going to show you things that you were meant to do, that, like, the passion that you were supposed to have about your purpose on this planet. he's going to do amazing, amazing things in your life. Excuse me. You get a little choked up about that sometimes. And it's because of experience. He has done incredible things in my life. He continues to do incredible things in my life. And I would say, if you want to be a dangerous man, get real right with your faith and build that muscle.
So for the people who are listening to this show tonight, man, I hope you are paying attention, because there is so much wisdom getting dropped this evening. Really appreciate what you said, Shane. The thing about mentors, brother, that is a huge, huge, powerful thing. And a lot of guys underestimate the power of having good mentors. A lot of young guys. I did this for a long time, man. I spent a lot of my younger days basically thinking I was all that in a bag of chips, too freaking smart to like take advice from whatever, you know, and it set me back. It set me back a lot. And finally, when I was able to put my ego on a shelf, that's when things started happening in my life. If you are a young dude and you feel lost, find some mentors. These guys are not going to be perfect. There may be parts of their life that you can look at and be like, hey man, this guy's got his shit together when it comes to his spiritual life or his family. He's got a great family, or his relationship with his wife or his partner, or his physical situation, or his dangerousness, or his business acumen, or his financial sense, or whatever it may be, and cultivate a relationship. This is going to require you to shelf that ego a little bit, suck it up a little bit, and go find a way to serve the person that you would like to mentor with. It's super easy to be around a guy and just be like, okay, teach me some stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, that guy is not going to be super like motivated to do that necessarily. There's plenty of guys out there who will, of course, do that. That there's lots of good people in there in the world who are successful, who would be happy if you're seeking knowledge to teach you. But at the same time, there's nothing wrong with cultivating those relationships and seeking them out and seeking ways to serve them, bring them something, take them to dinner. If they're willing to spend an hour of their time with you, coaching you, teaching you, buy them lunch or whatever. And you listen, some of you might be going, man, I can't afford to buy myself lunch. How am I going to buy this guy lunch? It's the kind of thing that will accelerate your life in a way where if that's a struggle for you now, it won't necessarily be as much of a struggle in the future.
Hell yeah. Good points, man. Yeah. And there's a theme that I keep seeing come up, and that is to add value wherever you go. Look, a man without purpose that is not making a contribution, you don't even need to exist, basically. Okay. You're just a waste of damn space. If you consume more than you contribute, then you don't need to be there. That's just as simple as that. There's something important about not just wasting up space and absorbing everything around you. And unfortunately, that's what we see a lot of people, men and women, doing now. But it's especially a travesty when it's men. Men are the ones who are supposed to be generating, providing things, creating things, adding things to the environment, sustaining their families, bringing things into existence that are adding value to everyone around them. Okay. So if you consume more than you contribute, take a look at that. And that's a part of where that self-assessment comes in. But I'll let you know, if you're around the right guys, they'll let you know. They're like, dude, you're just a freaking leech, man. What's wrong with you? Do you actually add value to anything, or do you just go around and take what you can from everyone else? And this includes knowledge. And that's a great point that you brought up, Alex, is, you know, as you seek out mentors, as you seek out people to learn from, there are ways that you can return that. There are ways that you can reciprocate that by adding value to them. And it could just be something, you know, as easy as, you know, let me buy lunch. Okay. And it doesn't have to be in it. You know, if you don't have the resources, okay, do what you can. All right. There are ways to add value in any situation that you find yourself in. But in addition to that, as you grow, it's important to recognize the fact that there are other people that are on the same path that can grow from what you are learning as well. You don't have to be perfect at everything. You don't have to have all of the answers. But I promise you, if you're older than 20 years old, there's some kid out there that needs to have some type of mentorship from a young adult. There's some kid out there that would give anything just to have a little bit of attention and a little bit of investment from another man, even if you're just a few years older than them. Okay, because right now, the majority of the examples and any type of influence that they're receiving, it is not positive and it is not healthy. Don't be afraid to invest in other people just because you know you don't have all of the answers. Okay, you don't need all of the answers because you have what you have, and what you have is of value if you share it with other people. So show up with that mindset of making a contribution. Ask yourself constantly, am I consuming more than I'm creating right now? Am I contributing more than what I'm taking from other people? And be prepared to answer that thing honestly. Because really, the fact of the matter is, if you're behaving as an effective man and if you're being good at being a man, you're contributing so much that there's no question about it. Okay, you are pouring into other people and you are pouring into your community and you are creating a better environment than was when you found it. And there's no question about it. You don't have to ask other people because you know, all right, because it's just a habit. It's a mindset. It's just a way of life. But be that man that is giving to other people, that is taking what you have, that is taking the gifts that you've been given and taking what you have learned, and you are sharing it with other people and you're pouring it into your community and shaping the environment around you, building up other people, being that tide that lifts all boats by continuously growing and improving. But yeah, don't just consume. Don't just kick back and soak it all up. All right. Because there's enough of that already. Don't be a black hole. Okay. Be something that delivers and brings and provides sustenance and not even positivity. Okay. Because I'm not saying that you need to go around like patting everybody on the back, telling them how freaking great they are. Okay. Because not everybody needs to hear that. It also requires a little bit of, I guess, moral courage to be able to tell people when they're jacked up, because the fact of the matter is, and this is something I'll go back to Jordan Peterson, that he dropped a line in something somewhere, but basically he said, you're not as good as you should be, and you know it. Okay. And that's something that I could tell myself every single day. I could look in the mirror and point my finger at myself and say, you're not as good as you should be, and you fucking know it. Now, what are you going to do about it? Because I'm never going to be as good as I should be. Because if I ever think that I've reached that point where it's like, psh, I'm good, man, I've done it, here I am at the top, somebody needs to kick me in the nuts and humble me real quick, all right? And each of you has permission to do that, but you better be damn sure, because I might kick you back if you're wrong.
I can tell you, right now, you're not that good, Gabe.
Thank you, and I need that.
When you come for the king, you better not miss. Speaking of adding value.
Here we go. Oh, hell yeah.
Wow, yeah. Okay, for those of you who don't know, go check out solosatoshi.com. These guys do affordable BitX solo miners. The whole idea here is, if we can put one of these things in every home in the world, that will completely decentralize the Bitcoin network. Doesn't matter if a nation state goes, Bitcoin mining is illegal, there's no way they'll kill every one of these things. It will secure the network. It'll decentralize the network. By the way, it costs less than $5 a month of electricity to run one of these things, and you have you're 70 times more likely to win the lottery with this than you are playing the lottery. You can actually win a whole block with these things if you're solar mining. So something to consider. The next thing to check out is punchplate.com. Punch plates are basically metal seed plates. They have this little grid, as you can see. Shane's got one there as well. But they're fantastic. Great way to store your seed phrases. Basically immune to water and fire damage. Go check it out, punchplate.com.
Didn't really go to those, Alex.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. Nice job. You make me do these a lot, so... repetition.
If you send me the reads, I'll do. I'm teasing. Okay, just a big shout out to the guys over at Punch Plate too. These punch plates are a fraction of the cost of some of the other stuff that's out there, $24 to $30 somewhere, versus the competitors that are $70, $80, $100 plus, and for whatever, I don't know what you're stamping those into, but steel works just fine.
Yeah. Okay, one other thing. We've been talking a lot about like getting together with dudes, and iron sharpens iron, all that other kind of stuff. We are doing a Bitcoin Veterans Warrior Moot October 10th through 13th. That's going to be in the Colorado Rockies. This is open to veterans first. We'll probably give the next couple of weeks for if you're a veteran, you're interested in coming up there. After that, we're going to be opening it up to others, whether you're a veteran or not. If you want to come up, just hang around with a bunch of dudes, do man things. We're going to be camping, building fires, cooking meat, possibly shooting guns, bows. We have a gentleman who is a former Navy SEAL who used to teach the SEER stuff to all the special operations guys. He's mean. He's brutal. Actually, he's not. He's one of the kindest guys I know.
He's talking about the same guy.
But he'll probably be teaching some survival stuff. We'll do some land nav, radio comms, all that other kind of stuff. Shoot us a DM if you're interested in learning more about the Bitcoin Veterans Warrior Moot.
Hell yeah.
All right, we're at 8:16. What do you think?
Boy, I mean, usually at this time of day, we've got some story time going on.
Who said that? Who the fuck said that? What have we got here? A fucking comedian, private joke.
Oh, that always cracks me
up. Does anybody have a good story for their night? I mean, anything fun, pressing, embarrassing, moments learned, fatherhood, mastery, student, I don't know. Anytime you were in the military and
I got one.
Yes, Gabe, story time.
All right,
so a rare treat, ladies and gentlemen. So,
I mean, we've definitely had some pretty damn good stories on here, but I'll give it a shot. So, I'll take you back to Camp Stanley, South Korea, back in the 2000s. It's my first duty station out of basic training. So, you know, I was like carved out of wood, man. I was good to go. You know, you get done with basic training and you do a lot of running, and so. Live in the barracks. And for a while, it's just me and this other dude. And it's great. He's a cool guy. You know, we hang out, we drink beers, we listen to the same music, we have a good time. And eventually we get this other guy that gets stationed out there. He's not a very good roommate. He's real freaking messy. He's kind of like Private Pyle. He's just that dude. You know, he's real freaking sloppy. I don't know how the hell he got through training. He must have got the fat boy waiver like 8 times. I'm sorry, everybody, but I'm not. So, you know, and we try to help him out. It's like, all right, man, come on. You know, we get him up for PT. We do all this stuff. He never takes a shower. You know, the dude just freaking stinks, man. Leaves his socks and his happy, crusty socks like laying around and all that. I'll let you figure out what that is if you don't know. But anyway, he's a big, fat, sloppy dude, and he's a pain in my ass. So I'm trying to help him out. And I was assigned to a Blackhawk unit at the time. And we used to do these exercises where we would have scenarios of if there was a helicopter that was down, and we would go and we would rescue everybody who was on the ground, blow up the helicopter, get rid of the sensitive items, do all that stuff. So we were doing a night training mission. And we go out there and I'm on the team that goes out and rescues everybody, and it's nighttime and we've got these ancient night vision goggles, and we land on the ground and we're going down, and our job is, of course, to go secure the perimeter, try to go find any of our guys that are on the ground. And if we see them, we're supposed to, you know, check them out. If they're alive, we got to retrieve them. And if it's safe, if they're dead, we got to, you know, take them back too. And so I'm scanning around, I'm looking, and these NVGs are freaking ancient. This terrible technology. There's no depth perception or anything. You're like looking at the ground, tripping on shit. I had a M16A2, and so you're like stabbing the barrel into the ground. You know, you can't fucking do anything. And, you know, he's got the helmet. It's all jacked up. It's a fucking mess. But, and I'm going, and I come across this dude, and he's laying on the ground, and I'm like, all right. And I'm like, hey, blah, 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 you all right, man? And he's like, I'm not dead. I'm not dead. And I'm like, is that you? And I'm not going to say his name, but his name was Showerman. And I'm like, Showerman, is that you? I said his name. And he's like, yeah, man, it's me. I'm injured. You got to take me back. Okay. And I'm like, maybe like 165 pounds. You know, I'm like 6'2". I'm like a freaking, you know, a muscular spaghetti noodle. And this dude is like well over like 225 pounds. And I'm like, No, man. No, are you sure? He's like, no, man, I'm not dead. They said that I'm still alive. You got to carry me back. And I was like, no. I said, you're fucking dead, man. Shut the fuck up. I'm not carrying you back over there. And he's like, I'm not there, man. You got to carry me back. And so the guys that are monitoring the whole activity and all that stuff, they're like, hey, you got a live one. Get his ass up and take it back to the... I was like, oh, fuck. I get down there and I put this guy into a freaking fireman carry. And he's like, not making it easy for me, okay? He's like all dead weight. He's got a freaking flak vest on to make it even worse. He's got a weapon and all this crap. I sling this fat ass over my shoulders and I'm like, come on, shower man, you gotta help me out here. He's like, I can't help you, man, I'm injured. I'm running. I got the guy, and of course, you know, the props are all spinning on the bird. It's chaos. I got the MVGs on and I'm running towards the freaking side of the Blackhawk, and it's got this metal rim, okay, and it's about knee height, and I'm running and I think that it's a little further away and it's not. And I run smack dab both freaking knees into the edge of this fucking lip of the helicopter. Showerman goes flying over me, and I don't care anymore at this point. I'm like, bleh, I'm throwing his fat into the freaking helicopter, and he's busting all over everything. And I go crashing into that thing. He's like, thanks for not leaving me behind, man. I get in there and I start wailing on this freaking dude, man. I thought he broke my damn leg, and I said, yeah, you're good. Anyway. So I gave him a little bit of reciprocation just to let him know exactly how I felt about it. And we didn't become friends that were any closer after that event either. And matter of fact, afterward, he requested to be moved to another room. So that was the end of our happy story for Showerman and I. But other than that, I'm sure he was a really nice guy. And hopefully he's one of these people that took that as an example of being held accountable and decided to improve his life after that situation. So there you have it. That's my story.
Fantastic story.
It sounds like it's a very real level of accountability, though. Like, if you're a dude and you're going to be a part of a team, especially a team that's going to deal with reality, which involves combat sometimes, if you're going to be the fat ass of the group, you're putting a lot of responsibility and accountability on the rest of everybody else, and you're holding none for yourself.
Some of us are just big boned.
Yeah, well, I can tell you there are some guys that you would rather carry than others, regardless of how big boned they are. Do you know what I mean? If he was a hygienic dude and was nice and like cleaned up after himself and was just a cool guy, it's like, all right, you know, he might have this weight problem, and that's cool. I get it. I can forgive that because he's a nice dude. I know that he's trying his best and all that, but he was just the full shitbird package, man. And I was, those guys are just heavier when you pick them up, I think.
260, like I had a guy like that in training that, well, he was 260, but he was 260 of muscle versus 260 of fat. And like, for those that don't know the difference, 260 of muscle is a lot easier to work with than 260 of fat. Cause like that's taking up a lot more space. And like when you're going to do a fireman's carry and you're going to like loop somebody over your shoulders, you don't want them taking up a lot of space.
It's like picking up a waterbed mattress.
Quote of the night.
Lord.
All right, fellas, let's wrap this thing up. Final thoughts, Alex.
Yeah, I would say that everything we talked about in terms of like not seeking comfort and seeking discomfort, looking to become better, finding people who can help you be better, getting around dudes who are literally better than you. That's tough sometimes, like being around guys that are better than you. That's hard because it literally points out your flaws continuously. And if they're strong dudes, they're gonna fuck with you a little bit. And like some guys are like, oh, you're just being a bully. I'm going to take my ball and go home. No, man. Suck it up. Learn from it. Be thankful that they're willing to help you and make you a better person. And then just go grind. Like if you suck, just go grind and be better.
Hell yeah. And I promise I'm not as much of an asshole now as I was back then in that incident. So I'm much more focused on investing in people. And those were back in my rage days. It's mostly out of my system now. Apparently
I have a hard time picturing Gabe in rage days. Actually, he's one of the nicest guys I've ever met.
Thanks, man. But I'm going to echo what you said. Find the right people to be around. Find people that are going to challenge you. Convenience, it literally will kill you Okay. And if you're not challenging yourself now, then the challenges will find you, just like you said. Except when they find you, you're going to be too weak to navigate through them and to overcome them. So find them intentionally so that that way, when those other challenges do come down the pike, you're going to be ready for them. You're going to be better equipped. And not only that, you're not going to be alone. Okay. Because some people are strong on their own and they think that they can handle everything that you know, solo style, but you just freaking can't. Okay. And if you want to test that, test it. And I promise, okay, those negative forces in this world, they're gonna prove you wrong. All right. And even if you do find yourself challenged with a situation and you can't overcome it, if you just get freaking kicked down and if you get stomped into the dirt, at least you got your brothers around you. Okay. Because it's a lot easier to come back from those sorts of things when you're not just doing it on your own. So find that community. If you don't have one, if this is your first time listening, man, send us a message. Send us a DM. Okay. You don't have to be a veteran for us to want to connect with you. You don't have to have served in the military to get yourself involved in a group of other men that want to see you do well in life, that want to contribute to, that want to add value to you. But above all else, find situations where you can add value and you will find other people that are doing the same. And that's what I got.
What I will add to the lessons that we've been disseminating, and particularly what Gabe was getting at with him in his asshole period, was that like when it comes to like the types of guys that you want around, that you want to keep around, you want guys that are effectively gonna like hold you to the fire as far as integrity goes. Right? Integrity and accountability. And oftentimes that means being the guy that's willing to be the asshole. Because we've seen what society has produced when all we worry about is other people's feelings, and it's not exactly good. And feelings aren't like the panacea, right? Like you can have like a fragile ego and have your feelings hurt when something's true. That probably means that you should probably alleviate that problem, right? So, like, I stop being worried about being an asshole. Like, obviously, like, you want to filter a little bit, right? Like, you can't be an asshole all the time and be an effective leader or be an effective man. But you have to learn the communication skills to say something that would be deemed asshole-ish and is still true, but is being capable of received by the other party. And Jocko Willink talks about that. He has talked about it in his book. I can't think of the title of the book right now, but also on his podcast, is that Jocko Willink talks about, he's like, if you're a leader and you're trying to pass down a message and it's not getting received, that's your fault. Like, that is on you. So if you're being too much of an asshole and somebody's not receiving it, that's your responsibility, guys. Like, I don't know what to tell you. And that's something that, like, I think we've all probably passed down that lesson to particularly like the Bitcoin community, right? It's like, there are some things that the Bitcoin community holds on to that upholds that can be deemed as assholes from the outside. But then once you actually understand what it is that we're saying and why we're saying it, it's a little bit easier to receive. It's just, I don't know. You got to be willing to be an asshole a lot of times, guys, especially to be a good guy.
You'll all be happy to know.
And a good guy.
You'll all be happy to know that Bitcoin is still at 59K.
Going right back to 58 tomorrow. Yeah. Speaking of Bitcoin and wrapping this thing up, you know, for a lot of the guys that are out there struggling, maybe this is the first time you've heard about Bitcoin veterans. Maybe it's the first time you ever heard about Bitcoin. And I know we did not talk about Bitcoin at all in the show. And I will tell you in future shows, you know, pay attention, because we're gonna lay it down for you. One of the things that you can do is take your time and invest it into a deflationary tech, freedom tech, and that is Bitcoin. And a lot of people don't understand that. As you continue to go down these rabbit holes, continue to hang out with guys like this and Bitcoin veterans, we're going to help you understand what this freedom tech is. We're going to guide you along that. We're going to get you back on the mission. And I will tell you, you know, from a guy that's been that nihilist who was on the, you know, multiple hamster wheels all at the same time, trying to make things happen, storing my value, my time, my energy, and my effort in fiat, whether it was cash, whether it was some sort of ridiculous 401k or IRA or any of those kind of things, whether it was gambling in the stock market or finding some, you know, shitcoin casino out there. Those things are all designed to take your time and your wealth. Bitcoin is the only tech out there that is designed to make sure that your life, your energy, the effort that you put in is not only recognized, but amplified over time. And it's going to give you the time and space to do some of these things we talked about tonight, to go find a master, to go and get uncomfortable, to go to the gym, to spend more time with your kids, to spend more time with your wives, to be a better dude, to spend more time with your friends. And those guys groups, that's going to sharpen you up. So if there's anything that's going to help you get into this groove, Bitcoin is definitely one of those techs that you need to learn. You need to start to really understand it, and you need to start moving into it as fast as possible. We've got a great group for you here, BitcoinVeterans.org. If you want to sign up, we will get you on the mission as quick as we can. And that's going to be, you know, mostly determined by you, but, Alex, Gabe, Mike, really, really appreciate everything you guys laid out tonight. Unbelievable the amount of ground we've covered, and the signal just absolutely 100% tonight. You guys have just knocked it out of the park. Thanks to everybody out there in Bitcoin Veterans who is doing this with us, the army of Bitcoin Veterans. We are literally growing into, you know, legions, and this is going to be one of those that helps to create that new parallel system that is built on, you know, proof of work. And I can't wait to see as far as this thing will go. But thank you guys for all being here. Until next week, same channel, same time, 7:30 Tuesday nights. And we will see you then. Peace.